Good morning, everyone. Would you stand as we read today's scripture from Daniel 6? It pleased Darius to appoint 120 satraps to rule throughout the kingdom with three administrators over them, one of whom was Daniel. The satraps were made accountable to them so that the king may not suffer loss. Now, Daniel so distinguished himself among the administrators and the satraps by his exceptional qualities that the king planned to set him over the whole kingdom. At this, the administrators and the satraps tried to find grounds for charges against Daniel in his conduct of government affairs, but they were unable to do so. They could find no corruption in him because he was trustworthy and neither corrupt nor negligent. Finally, these men said, "We will never find any basis for charge against this man Daniel unless it has something to do with the law of his God." So the administrators and the satraps went as a group to the king and said, "Oh, King Darius, live forever. The royal administrators, prefects, satraps, advisors, and governors have all agreed that the king should issue an edict and enforce the decree that anyone who prays to any god or man during the next 30 days, except you, O king, shall be thrown into the lion's den. Now, O king, issue the decree and put it in writing so that it cannot be altered in accordance with the law of the Medes and the Persians, which cannot be repealed." So King Darius put the decree in writing. Now, when Daniel learned this, that the decree had been published, he went home to his upstairs room where the windows opened towards Jerusalem. Three times a day, he got down on his knees and prayed, giving thanks to God, just as he had done before. This is the word of the Lord. You may be seated.
All right. Well, I hope you found us on our webpage. We had a server crash, so we're not coming through on Facebook. And hopefully we'll get that up and running in the next few minutes. But, you know, we are just living in crazy times, aren't we? And this is part of it, coming to you virtually. And yet there's all kinds of problems with that. We pray about that. Hopefully, we will not have any of these glitches. But man, I'm glad that you're able to watch this today on our webpage, on everyone's.org. And I hope things are going okay with you. I know this is a difficult time on a lot of different levels, and we are praying for you. We share deeply for you, and just praying that God keeps you with a spirit of peace and confidence during this time, and that you're going to make it through. And so just keep praying for each other. First thing I have to do is something that I'm bummed that I have to do, but it's, I need to apologize, because last week I passed on a bogus quote that I thought was legit, and it wasn't. And so last week, if you watched, I passed on a C.S. Lewis quote that I thought was C.S. Lewis, and it had been circulating through social media and the web, and so I went online to find the original source, the source document, and I found some Christian organizations who were passing on this quote and who were saying that it was from UK letters, and so I thought it was legit, and it wasn't. And so I just asked for your forgiveness, because that is something that really bugs me, I feel terrible about, and I wanted to let you know about that as soon as I can. So, let's see. Is next week, in this bizarre time that we're living, we're going to experience an Easter like we've never experienced before, and that we can have gathered together to celebrate really the greatest Sunday of the year for us. And so, as much of a bummer as that is, it's also an opportunity, because there's going to be some people who may be bored, who are maybe anxious during this time, who are maybe thinking deeper thoughts than they normally do about life, when they have the busyness of life just kind of, you know, rushing them along. But maybe they're considering some bigger things. And so let's take advantage of that opportunity to just invite friends to watch and view our virtual Easter gathering next week. And so make sure you take advantage of that this week to send out those invitations. There's also some view parties that you can have. We need to get some friends, work associates, neighbors, and all virtually have a view party. So just be thinking and praying about that. We look forward to celebrating Easter with you next week. Now, we're in Daniel chapter 6 today, and it's our last some weeks in the book of Daniel. And it's just been unbelievable. It's just God in providence has allowed us to focus on this book during this season, this time. And it just is so, so appropriate for the moment that we're in. And so now in Daniel chapter 6, the historical context is, as we just left chapter 5, where at the very end of chapter 5, the Babylonian Empire has fallen to this empire that was the strongest, the most wealthy, the empire that ruled the most land ever in the history up to that point, had now fallen on November 2nd, 539 BC. And the Babylonians fell to the combined forces of the Medes and the Persians, and so that ushered in the Medo-Persian Empire, ruled by the Persian king Darius. And so that's the context now as we step into chapter 6 in those verses that were just read. So what happened is, in order to oversee and rule such a big chunk of the world, that they took the Middle East, basically, and they broke it into 120 counties. Over each one of those counties, they put a senator or a satrap over each one of those counties to rule over those 120. And then those 120, they broke down to three areas, and they put an administrator, like a governor, over each of those three areas. And one of those governors that was appointed by the king was Daniel. And so I just want you to get your mind around that. That's a crazy thing. Because back then, just like now, if you're a politician, you've become an elected official, and you are put into a position of power, you build a cabinet around you that are your most trusted advisors, people that have been with you for a long time. And so now, as the Medo-Persian Empire is establishing its rule, it gives one of the most important, powerful positions to Daniel, who is not a Mede, he's not a Persian, he's not even a Babylonian. He's a person that was conquered by the people he just conquered. And so that's Daniel, and yet he has risen to a place where he is so well respected and trusted that now this new empire places Daniel in this great position of authority. So one of the things that just jumps out at you is just the amazing character of Daniel. So here's the first point. Godly influencers, what we're looking at Daniel today, and that's what he is. He's a godly influencer. They move out with integrity. And so the church is up to building. What an appropriate thing to think of right now is the church comes together in the building, and the church is you and I, and we are scattered all throughout the greater Portland area, scattered all throughout the United States, and the world as we're doing today. And that is the church, because the church is you and I. Jesus goes with us, and so wherever we go, Jesus goes, and we're to have an influence like Daniel's having. And so verse 2 says, with three administrators over them, one of them is Daniel, the second pastor made accountable to them, and here's why Daniel was placed there, so that the king might not suffer loss. The king is saying, who can I put in a position of authority that I know is going to protect my stuff, my possessions, my rule? Who will be honest with me? Who will be a person of integrity? Who can I trust with the king's resources? Who do I know will represent me well with other leaders and other influencers? And he says, man, there's nobody of higher integrity that I'm aware of than Daniel. In fact, look at verse 3. Now Daniel so distinguished himself among the administrators and the satraps by his exceptional qualities that the king planned to set him over the whole kingdom. So not just one of three ruling over the kingdom, but he decided to put Daniel over those other two and make him really the second in command under himself over the entire kingdom. And this really shows us that Daniel took the words of Jeremiah the prophet in chapter 29 that we shared with you a few weeks ago, where Jeremiah wrote to the exiles in Babylon and said, hey, if you're a follower of Jesus, this is what you need to do. Don't isolate yourself. Don't hide because you're in a pluralistic, secular society now. other city, for the betterment of Babylon, because if there is peace and prosperity in Babylon, that's also good for you. So work to that end, yet at the same time, remain a distinct people as followers of God. And that's exactly what Daniel lived out. Daniel engaged, he integrated, but he did not assimilate. He remained a distinct follower of Jesus. And this is our God. And this is so aligned with what Jesus tells us in the New Testament, to be followers of him. Matthew chapter 5, verse 13, Jesus says, "You are the salt of the earth. But if the salt loses its saltiness, how can it be made salty again? It is no longer good for anything except to be thrown out and trampled underfoot." And so Jesus says that we are to be salty. Now, how are you to be salty? Well, you're not salty if you just stay together in a pot of salt. But salt needs to get out. In order to have an impact, it needs to go away from the rest of the salt. It needs to go away and be in places that aren't salty. And that was the life of Jesus. Maybe you think about him and you read through some of the gospels, you see Jesus out and he was doing things that we can't do today, like hugging people, touching people, being with people, emotionally engaging with people, engaging the marginalized, the outsider, the foreigner, the leper, the sick. Jesus was salt. He was having an impact by spreading his love and his truth around him. And so salt disperses, but it just doesn't disperse. Today we use salt for flavor and for taste, but that was not the primary use of salt back then. And so when they were thinking of salt, they were thinking of a preservative. Salt was not the flavor because it was so much more valuable than that. It was actually to preserve food. It was actually to preserve things that could break down and be lost. It would preserve things that would go back and fall apart. And that was the primary use of salt. And so in order to be salty, we need to step into situations that will fall apart, that will break down, that are disintegrating. And we need to step into them and help bring wholeness and health and prosperity back into those places. And so can you think of anything right now that's just kind of breaking down and falling apart? We're just watch the news, right? I mean, we're living in a global pandemic where people emotionally are just rot with anxiety, where they're isolated from each other. I mean, the poor extroverts out there must be just suffering as you're held away and isolated from each other. So people are starving relationships. And on top of that, we see unemployment going up and up and up. And so people are panicking financially, struggling financially, not to mention the health crisis itself and people who are getting sick and facing their mortality. And so how are we salt in the midst of this? Well, we need to step in and see, okay, are there places that we move out and get our eyes off of ourselves and we are the church because we move into places that are falling apart. And maybe it's just listening to friends and how they're doing and being that listening and caring ear and praying for them. Maybe we're going to see a couple of, because this is actually one of the things that's been happening the last couple of weeks, is really a view of that. How can we help? Are there specific things that we can step into? So let me just give you a few today. One of the things is if you go onto our website and you look at our community service, you'll see that our teaching that operates in our lower level is still functioning. And what it's functioning differently, they're actually have bags of groceries as people come to get their groceries. They don't come and shop like they normally do, but bags of groceries are brought out to them. And I think in like an hour last week on a Monday, over 50 families were served in that way. Now, on that site, you can find what are they in need of? You know, what canned goods, cereals, what things are the pantry in need of? So check that out, because maybe as you go out and you're shopping and you have the finances to do it, you can pick up some of those things and then bring it to the pantry. And so you can go on and you can find out some of the needs there. Also, some of you are just less than that. You're in a job situation where your job is not at risk. The paycheck is still coming in. And you're wondering, how can I help those that aren't experiencing that same thing? Well, the paycheck is one way. But another thing that I know that some of you are doing is you're thinking, okay, who in my life are services that I normally use that I'm not using now because of this situation? So that means the people who are giving those services aren't able to make an income right now. And so maybe you still decide to pay them. Maybe you have people to clean your house or do your garden or do daycare or cut your hair or do your spin classes at the club or are servers at restaurants and you have a relationship with them. Maybe you just extend a gift to them and drop off an envelope to their mailbox to their house and just thank them for their service to you and that you want to be a blessing to them during this tough time for them. So that's an idea. Some of you are asking, what about our faith family with those people who are in need? We have a fund called Operation Blessing. If you want to give above and beyond your normal giving, you can go online and on the drop-down menu where it says General Funds, or there will be a place where it says Operation Blessing, and that specifically goes to people in our faith family who are in financial crisis. And so those are some opportunities for us to be solved when there are some things that are falling apart around us and we can step in as a preservative, something that brings some help into the midst of chaos. Verse 4. This is giving a rise to power. The administrator in the satrap tried to find grounds for charges against Daniel in his conduct of government affairs, but they were unable to do so. They could find no corruption in him, because he was trustworthy and neither corrupt nor negligent. And so what they're doing here is they have professional jealousy happening. It's just a good old professional jealousy, and it's like, okay, I want to undermine him. Now, he has been in a position of authority and leadership and influence for 66 years. So they're thinking, if he was like that, we can find some dirt. We'll be able to undermine his influence. And so they go after it, and yet they're not able to find King Solomon in Daniel's closet. You think after 16 or 66 years they can find something, they can find some problems in the book where he's made some mistakes, or maybe spent some money, or maybe had a mix-up with an intern, or maybe he just lost his temper with a staff person and treated them poorly, or there was a staff person they fired who had dirt on him. And they looked for it, and they dug, and they could not find it over 66 years. Now, let me just stop, because as I read that, I started thinking, I bet people can find stuff on me. I'm not a Daniel. And what about God just reminded me, Daniel is one of those rare people in the Bible, because the Bible talks about people that God is using. It's usually pretty easy to see how messed up they are. And how God needs them in spite of themselves many times. But Daniel is one of those rare, I think Joseph as another one, but that's an example of somebody who's just remaining faithful. And the information that we have about him just shows a guy who's just faithful, been faithful to God. And I want you to know, don't just shut up perfection. We are flawed individuals. But what we know to be true is that if we press into Jesus and live with Jesus, he'll transform our heart and our mind, and we will see progress in our journey. And so one of the joys of walking with Jesus is to look back and see the progress that he's made in your life. And so we're not after perfection, but we are thankful for the progress that we have in our journey with Jesus. And so don't get hung up on that as you read through Daniel. Verse 5. Finally, these men said, we're never going to find any basis for charges against this man, Daniel, unless it has something to do with the law of his God. And so what they're saying is, the only way we're going to get him is to use his strong relationship with his God against him. And that that they do. And so they go to the king and they get on the king's ego and they say, you've been doing such a phenomenal job. You've conquered all your enemies. You are now the greatest king on earth. And so what we should do, just for a 30-day period, we should ban all other worship of anything else besides you. And for 30 days, we should only worship you. And so that's the only thing you deserve. But you don't think that's a good idea? And the king just gets sucked into it and says, yeah, let's make this happen. And by the way, we think that this should be punishable by death, because this is a serious thing. We really want to honor you. And he says, sure, make it happen. So the trap is set for Daniel. Verse 6. Now when Daniel learned that the decree had been published, he went home. He went home to his upstairs room, where the windows were open towards Jerusalem, and three times a day he got down on his knees and he prayed, giving thanks to God, just as he had done before. See, here's the second thing: is godly influences are fueled by their ongoing relationship with God. You see, while the Jews under this time of exile, where they were under the rule of the Babylonians and now the Medo-Persians, they felt like they were abandoned by God. And yet Daniel never felt that way, because every day he spent time with God and he experienced the presence of God. That was just his everyday practice. And so now with this decree happening, he's not rebelling. He's not saying, okay, I'm going to show you, I'm going to rebel against that decree, and I'm going to go and pray. No, Daniel's just living life the way he lived every day. It was just part of the rhythm of his life. This wasn't an act of protest, but this is saying, my life is dependent upon my relationship with God. And so I pray and spend time with God, not to rebel, but just because I want more of God. I mean, that's it. His heart yearned for more of God. And so he could not imagine going through a day without spending time with God. And so it was not a rebellion. He was not protesting. He was just living his normal life. And his normal life knew that he knew God was with him. And so he lived his life every day with God. You know, and it seems like every week as we've gone through this book, this has been one of the points. It is, where do we get our fuel for our life with God? Where do we get our fuel to stand in a world that's secular and pluralistic, and to keep perspective and to engage and yet remain distinct as a follower of God? You know, where does that heart and that motivation come from? It doesn't come from just trying harder, from working hard, from making a list of things you need to do better at, and trying harder. No, it comes from a vibrant relationship that we're developing with God. And so the question again this week is, are we taking advantage of time that we have in our day to spend some time with God, to acknowledge that He's with you, to recognize that He's walking with you every day, to remember who He is, to pray to Him, to confess that we're just, you know, we're forgetting to trust in Him, because we forget who He is, and we forget we need to trust in Him versus ourselves or the world around us. Are we thanking Him for all the blessings in our life? Are we worshiping Him and singing back to Him praises about who He is? And so, are you doing okay with it? Are you remembering to walk with God every day? Let me tell you, in my own life, it's a battle. This has been a battle. As life has been turned upside down, the norm, and you just get bombarded with news that is concerning and discouraging. I'm just fighting for perspective. And I just keep on going to God and reminding myself, okay, God, I need to remind myself of who you are. God, you're great, you're in control, you've been faithful. Not only have been faithful in the past, and you've read in the Bible, but you've been faithful in my own life. I see you working here and here and here and here. And I know you're a good God, and I know you're patient, and I know you're loving. You're a loving God, and you care for each one of us. And if nowhere I can go, I'll be outside your presence. And I'm just praying to God for who He is, worrying about. Here's my anxiety. Here's what I'm worrying about. And I recognize I have no control of that. But I know that you are in sovereign control, and I can trust you in that. And today I get to walk with you in that. And all of a sudden, these muscles right here, they start to relax. And the tension starts to go away. And I can start having peace and perspective and joy again, because today I get to walk with God. And so how are you doing that? Do you need to remember to stay with it, or is it time for course correction? And you need to step with more intentionality into your day to spend time with God. All right, verse 14. They spy on this man, and they see that he's praying to God. So they go and they tell the king, and the king is now backed into a corner. Verse 14. When the king heard this, he was greatly distressed. He was determined to rescue Daniel, and he made every effort until sundown to save him. See, the king was really disappointed, but he wasn't disappointed in Daniel. He was disappointed in himself for getting sucked into this manipulative little scheme that put him in a corner. And he said, why didn't he just back off of his, you know, his declaration? Why did he say, you know what, I'm racist now? That was a bad thing to do. Well, because the king spoke for the God. And so it was the idea that God was speaking, the gods were speaking to the king, and the king would say, you know, I'm telling you to do this, and the authority of all the gods behind me. And so he couldn't go and say, hey, I misheard the gods, because that would just, you know, undermine his authority. So he couldn't go back on what he said, so he was trapped. And so verse 16, so the king gave the order, and they brought Daniel, and they threw him into the lion's den. And the king said to Daniel, may your God, whom you serve continually, rescue you. I mean, he knows who Daniel is. He knows he's a man of integrity. He knows he's been duped. And now he has to follow through and send this man of integrity to his death. And so here's the third point. Godly influences will pay a price. Will pay a price. If you're choosing to follow Jesus, you know, we live in a secular, pluralistic world. Misunderstanding, being judged, being labeled, and maybe being persecuted is unavoidable. It's not a stopper when that happens. And the Bible shows us that in Jesus himself, in John chapter 15, verse 9, says, don't be surprised when people come up against you and say things against you and spread rumors and lies about you and maybe even persecute you because, are you better than me? Look what they're doing to me. And if you're my followers, why should you expect to be treated differently than I am? And so he says, it's not a shocker. And so don't, you know, sometimes we walk around and just think that we're martyrs. And just think, oh, it's a terrible, terrible society that's just against us. And Jesus is saying, don't act like that. You know, don't be woe is me. Don't be surprised. But have some understanding. They're not going to understand you because they're not going to understand your belief. And ultimately, they don't understand the gospel, which is good news. And so, they're not going to understand fully how come you're living the way you're living. And it's going to be frustrating to them. And that's just normal. Don't get freaked out about that. Just like it's normal for you, now as a follower of Jesus, and knowing what he's saying is for your best and for the good of humanity, for you to see people who don't believe in God, who are acting differently than what God said is best for us. That shouldn't be a shocker either. And yet so many times we just get knocked off our horse because we just think like, oh my gosh, I can't believe people are acting that way. Or oh my gosh, I can't believe people are treating this way. We shouldn't, but this shouldn't be a shock. But we still engage, and we understand there's going to be misunderstandings and differences, and we understand there's going to be persecution, there's going to be a price to pay, but we engage and engage in love, knowing that that's just part of the deal. It's just not so many times when people who are in the church and followers of Jesus have problems with people who aren't, or people who are outside the church have problems with people who are in the church, we like to come up with just very simplistic answers to why, to try to explain why this is happening. And so people in the church can say, well, these people are against us because we are just really being good. And we are followers of God, and so we are just light. And we're shedding light on their dark lives. And it's embarrassing to them. And so they have to the problem. We're just like Daniel. And that's not the problem. I mean, the truth is most of us aren't that much like Daniel. And the truth is we are taking the position of arrogant self-righteousness when we think that way. And we just give a simplistic answer that is not the problem, but we try to make ourselves look good and some years look bad. And just like those outside following Jesus, look at followers of Jesus and say, you know what, all followers of Jesus are just a bunch of hypocrites. They just tend to be narrow-minded and judgmental, and they're self-righteous and self-serving people. And that's the problem with the world. That's why we have problems in this conflict between people who are followers of Jesus and people who aren't. And that's a simplistic perspective as well, because that's not true. Even though all of us aren't really like Daniel in the sense that we can stack up to how what a person's favorite he is, but on the other hand, we are not, greedy, egocentric TV evangelists either. And so these are just simplistic issues that we go to. And yet the truth is that we can engage in the society and in the city, even though it's secular and pluralistic. God uses that to shape us, and God uses us for the betterment of the society. And so, I can tell you with all my heart that honestly, living in the Portland area has been so good for me. It's been so good for me with, a person who's been following Jesus and really living my life in an effort to press into Jesus more and more over my life. I've been doing that for decades now. And yet I live in a community that is known to be one of the least impacted communities by Christ in regards to God. And it's so good for me to live in this community because here's one reason why. Because my simplistic answers to life and the problems of the world, they get exposed for just what they are. Simplistic and stupid. And all of a sudden I get challenged back with some of that thinking. I need to press into God, and really it's allowed me to press in a deeper way in my relationship with God. And God, help me to understand your truth and at the same time love you. Help me see how you love people. And we're all messed up and we're still pursuing us, and yet some of us are so much in the dark and against you. And how did I do that? Look, and it exposes my past answers, and it drives me deeper into my relationship with God, and really wrestle with some of these clashes of my values and the world around me, its values, and its world views. And yet, on the other hand, it's also exposed areas in my life that I have picked fights in that are really non-essential things that like were essential as far as what followers of Jesus should be like and what other people who aren't following Jesus, they should be like too. And I just put spikes on some things that just aren't essential. And God's exposed my heart that, I have been judgmental and I do need to step in with love. And yet at the same time, how do I step in with love with loving other people, God, the way you love them, and yet honor and value what you say is true and right, and allow us to flourish as a people. You see, my bottom line conclusion is that sometimes God grows us up as his followers by taking us out of power and putting us into a secular, humanistic, pluralistic society that's the dominant thinking and says, I want you to learn how to engage in a loving way in the process I'm growing you up. You need the city, but also the city needs you. And it is a mutual, beneficial, not easy, difficult, and sometimes painful with a price to pay. But God uses it to shape us, and God uses us to bring health and prosperity to the city. So we can't be so underlined. And and the stone rolled over the entrance of that den. And the king went home and didn't sleep because he was just sick of it. And in verse 19 it says, "At first light of dawn, the king got up and hurried to the lion's den." You're the first little orange on the horizon that started rising up on the horizon. The king was already up because he didn't sleep, and he took off to the lion's den. Verse 20, when he came near the den, he called to Daniel in an anguished voice, "Daniel, servant of the living God, has your God, whom you serve continually, been able to rescue you from the lions?" Verse 21, Daniel said, "O king, live forever." Now, I don't think I would have said that. I don't think that would have been on my mind. I would have just said, "Hey, no thanks to you, king. You know, you're the one that just threw me in here, and yet my God saved me." But he, still a person of integrity, still a person giving to your king respect, "O king, live forever." 22, "My God sent his angel, and he shut the mouth of the lions, and they had not heard me, because I was from innocent to sight, nor have I ever done anything wrong before you, O king." And so here's kind of the moral of the story. And I want you to know, here's what the moral of the story is not. The moral of the story is not, if you're really good and you trust God, then God will protect you from all harm and will keep you safe. That is not the moral of the story. And if we buy into that thinking, it's only going to lead to unhappiness and disillusionment. Because that's not Christianity. That's not the message of Jesus. Because I know somebody who trusted God a lot more than Daniel did. Somebody who trusted God, and yet at the end of his life, he had a stone rolled over a tomb. And his body was marred, and there were wounds all over it. And so he was faithful to God, and yet full of wounds. You see, what I think we get a glimpse of here is not God will protect you from all harm if you're really good. That's not it. But here's what I think we get a glimpse of here. The moral of the story is God is showing us a glimpse of his redemptive work. We're getting a glimpse here of his redemptive work, that God wants to restore all things to himself and have peace rule throughout the world, just like he created heaven and earth, in order for his kingdom to rule the earth, and there was perfect harmony and perfect peace. And again, he said that one day that will again come as I establish my rule and my reign over all things. And so, in other words, when God does miracles, he's not doing them just to show off. He's not doing them just to show, "Here's my raw power, so you can be impressed with me." But he does miracles in the Bible to give you a glimpse of what his kingdom looks like. And so when he feeds hungry, he said, "You know, there'll be a day when nobody goes hungry." When he heals a leper or a sick person, he says, "There'll be a day where there'll be no more diseases, where your bodies will be perfected, where they will work the way they were meant and built and designed to work like. There will be no disease that will undermine them. There will be no cancer. There will be no pandemic. And all things will experience harmony." Isaiah chapter 11 says, "The wolf will lie down with the lamb. The leopard will lie down with the goat. The calf will lie down with the lion, and the yearling together. And a little child will lead them." There will be a day where God's rule, that he is going to reestablish his kingdom over a new heaven and a new earth, where everything will be in harmony together. And it's not only a glimpse of that future, but it's also a reminder of what he's done in the past for us to be in perfect harmony with God the Father. See, in God's kingdom, humanity is brought back into a right relationship with its origin, with its creator, its maker, God. You see, that there's a person who stepped into that lion's den. Says an angel, a messenger of God. If you go back a few chapters, where you see Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego thrown into the fiery furnace, does God bring us back into a right relationship and peace with God? Is He stepped into the fiery furnace with us? He stepped into the lion's den with us? You see, that person who is maligned in that person who is in the fiery furnace, I believe, is the same person who had the stone wall in front of the tomb when he sacrificed his life so that we can be brought into a right relationship with God. See, you're the same person who said, I will allow myself to put the sins of the world on me on the cross and allow myself to be forever separated from God the Father so that anybody trusts in what I'm doing for them, they will never have to be separated from God the Father. See, that's the greatest hope. See, God has made a way for you and I to be forgiven and brought back into a right relationship with Him. And if today you are at that point in your spiritual journey where you're recognizing, you know what, I need to trust in what Jesus did for me in order to be brought back into that right relationship with God, then I want to give you a chance to do that right now. So just bow your head and close your eyes, and you can pray to God. If you've never prayed before, it's just talking to God. It's just communicating to Him. And really, it's not about the words you say. It's really about the expression of your heart, what's really going on in your heart. And so if that's where you're at today, and you want to call out to God and recognize that you need Him, and you need His forgiveness, that He offers, you want to have a right relationship, and then pray something just like that. Just pray, God, I know that You love me, and I know that I need You, and I need Your forgiveness that You offer to me, so that I can be at peace with You. And so I ask You to forgive me, and to come into my life, and to walk with me through this life. I want to follow Him and trust Him because I know You're a good and loving God who's trustworthy. Father, I thank You for Your love. I thank You for Your pursuit. And I thank You that in times like Daniel in a lion's den, or in times where there's a global pandemic going on that's just crazy and it is scary, that we do not walk alone, but You walk with us through these times. And so, Father, our heart goes to You. Our trust goes to You. And we thank You that You're with us. And so now, because of our awe of You, we don't walk in fear, but we walk in peace.